Ever since there have been one-celled creatures on this planet, we have been struggling with this balance between maintaining our safety, our individual integrity, protecting ourselves, and the need to increase our genetic diversity or to increase the ideas that we bring out into the world and take in. And sometimes we do that graciously and sometimes we don't. As you heard in the reading, guard bees at a hive will allow in those bees who are covered with pollen or have other kinds of gifts to give, those worker bees who go out and collect the food, because that's helpful to the hive. And they will sometimes attack bees that do not have such gifts. A bee that goes to the wrong hive has the wrong smell. That's how they can tell the difference. And they will kick them out if they don't have something to offer. They also will gather together, all these guard bees, and sting a wasp to death, for example, or some other predator that tries to get in. So they are allowing in those who are helpful and trying to push away those who are not, which on an individual level may not be as hard to judge, at least among bees. For humans, it's a little tougher. Those who offer gifts don't always look the way we expect them to. They may look very different from us, and we have a hard time understanding people who are different and accepting people who are different. Maybe we can learn from bees. Another thing that bees do is they swarm. I'm sure you heard about swarming. It's when it happens is when a queen bee is about 3 years old. The bee, that for some reason, that bee takes a notion to go away and start another hive. Probably there are too many bees in that one hive already. And so she takes about half of the hive with her, maybe two-thirds, and they go off and start a hive someplace else. And then the ones that are left get a new queen, and they start over with what they've got and build the hive again. This is a great evolutionary tool. It decreases the overcrowding, assuming there is enough habitat for the bee to find another place to build their new hive. And it also increases genetic diversity. You've got, in the new hive, you've got this queen who is going to be mating with drones from other, or bees from other hives, and then come back and build that genetic diversity into the new hive. And the other queen is going to be able to find some genetic diversity where she's going. Plus, you've got the old genetic code that's going to be multiplied so it is safer than it would have been if it were in one place. If one hive dies, well, you've got the other one that will still be carrying on this genetic history. In a way, I think of immigration as being like swarming. Human swarming. It's kind of, before we called it immigration, it was just moving or traveling or exploring. And now it's anytime we go from one place to another, and especially in large groups, we are increasing our genetic diversity. We are increasing our ability to share not just our genetic material, although some people think our ideas and memes and things like that are kind of genetic as well, but however you think of it, we are increasing our ability to grow and change and evolve and understand new ideas and be creative, and it's building our resilience. Resilience is the ability to tolerate disaster or illness or anything that happens in our life that isn't going well. And some of us tend to be more resilient than others, and there are things that individuals can do to increase diversity, but there are also things that we as groups and communities can do to increase diversity, our resilience. And one of those is to increase diversity. That is one of the main things that we can do, in fact. You know, those insular groups where you've got interbreeding and all that stuff, you tend to have more physical health issues and mental illness. Doesn't go well. You also have a lot less creativity. You tend to develop more fear, which creates more violence, and things tend to implode. It doesn't go well. If we are open and accepting of the other, welcoming the other into our world, we build resilience as a community. Now, as individuals, this might not always be to our advantage. I think about the church in South Carolina, Charleston, where it was a black church that welcomed in this young white boy, young man, I guess, who looked a little uncomfortable, and they weren't really sure why he was there, but he had come, and they welcomed him to worship. And he took out a gun and shot and killed 9 of them. Well, it was perhaps not to the advantage of those 9 people and their families and to the church community. There was a lot of trauma and a lot of healing that needed to happen as a result of that, as well as the tragedy of those people dying. Afterwards, the members of the church and the family members of those people publicly forgave the young man. I think that it's clearly a risk. When we are open, when we allow our boundaries to be fluid, we risk dangers like that. On the other hand, if we do not risk, we gain no advantage. The Native Americans also were open and welcoming. They had some history before the Puritan settlers came. Other people had come and had gotten along with them. There had been no problems that I know of. So perhaps they were just expecting more of the same. Unfortunately, things did not turn out well. The people who came, the initial group, I don't know what their expectations were and what their plans were, but the Native Americans helped them survive. But more and more settlers came, and we know the story. They did not treat those who were originally here with any kindness or acceptance. They saw them as an other that did not belong in this place. Hard to fathom. But that was how it was. And the natives were decimated, were murdered, corralled into small home areas that were not particularly fertile. The places where the settlers didn't care to go. They welcomed and were abused and taken advantage of. And so when we think of a story like that, I, at least, naturally want to protect myself and my family and my community. I want to shore up those boundaries and those walls. Unfortunately, that way does not lead to more life. It leads to death, perhaps of another kind. So how do you balance that? There are certainly issues like making amends, like paying restitution, things like that, that are part of this whole issue of abuse and genocide. Those are issues that perhaps would be important to talk about on another day. Right now, I am trying to lift up the idea that even though there are risks and sometimes things do not work out well, us to be closed also destroys us. There are these creatures called eukaryotes. Actually, we are eukaryotes. Once upon a time, there was nothing but bacteria. And then, some bacteria, at least so it is supposed, lost their cell wall. Now, this actually happens. It's not that uncommon. Some kind of disaster strikes, or there's some other catastrophe, and the bacteria's cell wall will just kind of go away, disintegrate. So, a bunch of them, way, way, way long ago, lost those boundaries. The danger, of course, is that you can get sick and die, something can happen, it's easier for you to get eaten up, whatever. So there's that risk. However, there's also some benefit. You can change your shape, which I guess was useful back then. You can also engulf your prey. It's easier to find food, easier to eat. And there were these bacteria who did that, who then somehow survived this and took in some other bacteria that became mitochondria. Now, mitochondria are things that keep us alive. All multicellular life depends on mitochondria. If these bacteria had not taken mitochondria into them and become eukaryotes, we don't know what would have happened, but there certainly wouldn't have been multicellular life as we know it, and we would not exist. The mitochondria allow us to take in oxygen and use the oxygen, for example. They also tell cells when to kill themselves. This is really helpful if we're starting to develop cancerous tumors or something like that. Now, you know, it doesn't always work. Obviously, people do get cancer and they die. However, most of the time, we actually have all these little cells that kind of mutate and do these things that we don't like and are bad for us. But the mitochondria come in and tell them to kill themselves, and they do. And we're okay, at least for a while. So it's a really good thing that those eukaryotes lost their walls and took in something new and created an entire new life form, at least for us. And for all the life on this planet, because there'd be nothing besides bacteria. And I think there's one other class of creature that's kind of like a bacteria. So you might have forgotten, I'm afraid. No.
Archaea?
Yeah, I think that's what it is. An ice smart
Archaea.
Archaea?
Archaea.
Archaea. Yeah, I believe that is it. Thank you. So, diversity creates life, it sustains life. When we try to stop diversity, we destroy life. You see this in bees to some degree. Now, there's this honeybee crisis. We probably all know about this. Partly that's due to a lack of habitat. We've got all these chemicals that kill bees, but it seems there may be another reason for this as well, that honeybees are lacking the diversity that would give them the resilience to withstand some of the pressures that they're experiencing. And one way that beekeepers have squashed this diversity is by trying to keep hives from swarming. The idea is that if you can keep your hive from swarming, you'll make more money. So they figure that's a good thing. However, it decreases the genetic diversity of the hive. It keeps it from splitting off and developing queens that will then mate with bees from elsewhere and bring them new genetic material and increase their resilience. So bees are succumbing to things they might not have succumbed to before. There's a study that the Rockefeller Foundation paid for of immigration in New Haven, Connecticut, that highlights the gifts we get when we accept new people into our community. Now, we fear that there will be a lack of resources, for example. There won't be enough jobs for everybody. We fear that somehow these people who are coming in are going to be bad people and they're going to hurt us. And there are some people who come in are going to be bad people and hurt us. And some of the people who live here already are bad people and are going to hurt us. In New Haven, what they found, as Deanna Song and Mary Buchanan say in this article, Where Immigration Meets Resilience, is that the immigrants actually were good workers, and more of them had jobs than the people who lived in this country already, which meant that they were paying taxes. And it meant they had money to buy things, which supported the businesses in the area. And not only that, but these people had new ideas, and a lot of them were skilled individuals who helped the community and the businesses to thrive in new ways. It helped the schools, it helped civic groups. And these were folks that really fed the community. They also often started their own businesses, thus generating more income for the neighborhood and more jobs. So evidence from the report, Song and Buchanan write, also suggests that the region's people provide mutual support for immigrants, support which is crucial to the kind of integrative and inclusive community that's built to face the challenges that the future might hold. The community is more resilient now than it would have been had they tried to keep these people out. There are risks. Accepting strangers does not always go well, for at least we as individuals. However, we were not born to survive, really. We were born to give our gifts to the world for as long as we can, and then to die. Sometimes cells have to die so we, the bigger organism, can survive. Not that we necessarily have to die for the world to survive, although sometimes that does happen. Perhaps, regardless, sometimes we do die, and the community may be stronger because we accepted a risk. Now, I don't know if this country's community is stronger because the Native Americans accepted a risk of taking the white settlers. No. It's certainly more diverse. A lot of bad things have happened, but they've happened in Europe and other countries as well. Wherever there are humans, we overwhelm the land, and we take more than we need. That has always, it seems, well, maybe not always been true, but it certainly seems to be true right now. There are many, though, who don't choose to live that way, who do choose to be welcoming and inviting to all forms of life and to all people. And I believe that that way of being, that acceptance of the other, and that welcoming of the other, even when there is risk to the individual, is what sustains us as communities and what will sustain our world. So no, it does not always look like it goes well when we invite the other into our midst. I do believe that in the larger scheme of things, it is to our advantage to welcome those who come to us, because most of them are wonderful people who will feed our community and be a joy to us and to the world. May we help to create a loving, inclusive world where joy and diversity and resilience is the norm.